Amen. All right. In our lesson here today, on child rearing, child training, I want to start off this morning talking about the importance of chores or jobs, things you give your kids to do, and how important that is. I may mention weeks and weeks ago how it helps a child feel like they contribute because they are. And so it's important that way. You know, I was reading a bunch of different guys and different books and stuff like that. And, you know, if a child makes a mess, you make them clean up the mess when they're 2, 3, and 4. And the reason you do that is they understand now when they make a mess, they got to clean it up. And it's ingraining the consequences, right, of their actions. And so you want to train them to consequences, that, those sort of things. And chores or jobs are a great avenue in which to do it. Growing up, as you all well know, we had a list at the house. Dad put a list on the refrigerator of things that needed he wanted done and who was to do those things. And so that list was the start of the years of training in my household that I grew up in with my parents. And when I go down the list of all my siblings, when I think about what Tom does, what Tim does, what John does, what Ann's doing, and you go down the list, every one of my siblings, you know, they may not all be where I'd like them to be spiritually, but when it comes to work ethic or job, they're all hardworking. They're all successful in the jobs that they have. I've told this to my kids, but it is going to be more so in this day and age than ever before, a young child or a young teenager that can do what they're told and accomplish and get a job done is going to be very, very, very valuable to an employer. And I can't stress that enough. But you think about, I mean, I've got brothers who own companies. I have a couple brothers that are millionaires. They got, Lord just bless them and bless their efforts and all those sort of things there. And when I think about that, it all started with a list of chores on a refrigerator. And so those things are super important. And not only that, I watched those things pass from my siblings to their children. I mean, Tom's oldest boy, John, he ends up going to the Air Force Academy. Try getting in an Air Force Academy. It's not easy. There's a lot of things, and there's a lot of people vying for those few positions there. And all those things had to do with training. All those things had to do with discipline. And so you produce what you produce. If you don't train your kids or give them jobs to do or chores to do, I see it all the time in the affluent neighborhoods that I work in, people who their kids don't do a thing. They don't even lift a finger. Their mother's carrying in groceries. Dad's doing all, they hire somebody in. I mean, I go to these homes now. I'm at one, we're working at one now. I go in the door, I about fall over. There must be, and I'm not exaggerating here, 150 pairs of shoes when you walk in the door. It's like they buy a pair, and instead of putting it somewhere, they just buy another pair, and they're literally piled up when you walk in. Just last week going in there. And they hire somebody to come in and clean the house. They got 4 kids that are, I think the oldest is like 14 or 15. The youngest is like 8 or 9, 3 kids, and nobody cleans up. Well, that's for the cleaning gal. Well, here's the thing, and you might be blessed when you have the money and the wherewithal to bring someone in to clean your home. And let me make this recommendation. If it's for your wife, help yourself. I got no problem with that. But when your kids don't do a thing, and they can definitely put these things away and clean them up, all that kind of stuff, I think you do a disservice to your kid where somebody else waits on them hand and foot. Christ talks about that. He talks about a ruler's child as he grows up. He's just like a servant, right, until he comes of age, which means he does everything the other guys do. He's involved in all those things. He doesn't sit around and get waited on hand and foot. You can't take a kid, 8, 9, and 10, and just give them everything they want. They're going to be a spoiled, rotten brat. Now, if you want to be a blessing to your wife and you bring somebody in to clean your house and whatever, like that, fine. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But it's the kids' thing in those lists. So it's super important. So the things I was taught and trained in with my parents, I trained those in my children as well. My kids had things they had to do, and it helped them. Just keep in mind, you are molding that child and what you train them to be. I employ young men from time and again, and I've had guys in years past. I mean, the one kid, after the second day, I knew it's like, this is not going to work out. And after like a month, I had to let him go. He was awful. He's awful. He wanted to stare and look at everybody all day. And I'd come over and put my arm on his shoulder and say, man, we got some good-looking men working for us, don't we? I could stand here and look at these men all day. And that didn't even click with him. I was being sarcastic. He's just like, he didn't understand it. I guess you come and then they pay you, but you have to do something. And he became, you know, he went to school, that young man went to school and became a professor who teaches history. I'd like to find out where he's teaching at and just go sit in on one of his classes and just shake my head like, my boys had chores. My girls had chores. My boys had the difficult chores. I never wanted my girls to run a chainsaw. My dad won a chainsaw, cut himself three times. One time really bad, caught himself in the face. A couple other times, one on the leg, one on the foot. And after seeing that girl, I'm like, there's no way. If I had a daughter, like, Dad, I want to do everything the boys do. I say, you ain't running no chainsaw. You ain't getting chopped up. But I would take those boys and work them. I give them jobs to do. You know, hard work is its own reward. The Bible says in Psalms 128, verse 2, it talks of the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. So there's profit in those labors. He says it in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 23, and all labor, not some, but all of it, he says there is profit. Ecclesiastes 2:24, enjoy the good in his labor. Same thing's over in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 13. But it's important. It's important to work, and it's important to train those kids. You know, growing up, we never got paid for our chores. I see this nowadays. You know, the kids get an allowance, right? You have a set of jobs to do. You do the jobs and you get paid. There are parents who pay their kids. I never paid my kids. My dad never paid us. And I think I'm okay. The fact that he didn't pay me. Now, there were times we got a treat. I remember going in the back of that, what's the stretched out car that we used to have? Station wagon. Yeah. I remember going in the back and there was like the front seat, the back seat, and then the back of the car. And of course, with 11 kids at the time, I think we only had maybe 7 or 8 kids, but there were enough. The little guys like myself, I was in the back. And we look out the window, but Dad took us, he'd take us to get ice cream once in a while, once in a blue moon. Or he'd go grab some black licorice. That was one of his treats. Never got paid, but you know, that changed. You know, my sons were old enough to come to jobs. They would come to jobs with me. And if they worked and they picked up and cleaned up and stuff like that, they got paid. And you see the wheels turning. I remember Jonathan, one of the jobs I took him on. He's, you know, and then he's counting up how many hours he worked. He's, I think I paid him like $3 an hour. And he thought it was great. Like, man, look at that. I had like $24. Can I work next week? How about 8 hours instead of 6 hours? It's funny when you watch a little kid grasp the thing of capitalism, right? Yeah, they had to pay taxes. That's another conversation. Dad used to take money from us. I say it just like that too. He used to take money from. You had to pay room and board at my dad's house, and I could have swore I was 16 or 17 at the time, working at Fazio's, coming home. Tim was working at Country Counter. John was working at Pick and Pay. Tom would be there occasionally, and Ann was working. I know she was doing tables over there at like a wedding center and all that. So everybody's getting money, and Dad's the tax collector, my dad, would show up and say, all right, I need my money. And then we're sitting there talking one night. We're eating a pizza after work on a Saturday night. I remember a conversation with Tim and John. We're looking around, you're paying them, I'm paying. We started, I said, man, this guy's getting like $300 a week, was it, or something like that, or a month. I forget how much it was, but it was a good job. I'm going, man, this guy's got it made. My younger siblings didn't have to pay that. My parents got lazy, man. They slacked off. That's why we say that's a problem with my youngest siblings. You know, they kind of, mom and dad took the foot off the pedal. But, yeah, he could probably take Mondays off and Fridays off with the money he's making off his kids. Child labor laws, right? We had a guy, Timmy knows him, we were working for him. They would take in foster children. We were working at this job. I forget what we were doing. But this girl, this poor girl, they had a backyard fenced in, a couple dogs. And she had a pooper scooper. And I'd seen her doing this. They quadrant off the whole backyard. She had to take one step this way and walk the whole back. I mean, she was out there for like an hour. And then they had one of the kids actually came and worked for us for 2 weeks. And ADHD comes to mind, but we got him up on the roof, man. He's like running around. This is great. I want to be a roofer. It's like he just wanted to be away from his step parents. Oh, man. That's kind of overboard. If a child actually has chores, it definitely gives them that sense of value as they contribute to a family as a whole. You have to have the right chore for the right child. The task shouldn't be below them or above them. You give a task to a child that's way below them, they become bored. It's like the job that you have, right? There's some things under your job that are boring, but you have to do them. And you're an adult, and so you adjust and do them. But a child's not that way. A child is... you give them something that's boring, and after a while, they lose all heart and don't want to do it. So as the parent, as you're handing out chores, they have to be age appropriate, right? They have to be for the ability that child has. If it's beyond their ability, they'll become frustrated. So they're either bored on one end of the spectrum or they're frustrated on the other end of the spectrum. But that's your job as the parent. You have to give them a chore that'll help them and put them into a place. Teach boys to be men and train girls to be ladies. Modern day and age culture is let the child figure out what they are. That's really where we're at. A lot of your actors and actresses, you know, they have children and what they do, they let the child, if it's a boy, I mean, he wants to wear a dress, they let him wear a dress and vice versa. And they tout it. You'll see the media get up and they'll talk about these things. And, you know, I've had little kids that tell me they're a T-Rex. So do I dress them up like a T-Rex? You know, give them short little arms, a big tail on the back. Little kids have an imagination, but they have no idea what they are. And so you're letting a child, I mean, the ridiculousness of our culture and society nowadays, they want a child to figure out what they are. No, listen. Train your boys to be men and train your young girls to be women. You almost think, like, why do I got to say it? Because that's where we're at. That's where we're at. We are in a place. I was reading some stuff. I don't know if you ever heard, and hopefully you haven't, a guy by the name of Andrew Tate. He was a kickboxer and elevated up. He's from England. He's on this thing now where he kind of mentors and lectures young men, really because society has taken young men and made them effeminate. They've turned them that way. So now these young men are wanting to be young men, and this guy, they're gravitating to him. I'm watching another preacher, he's from Australia, and he's talking about how the churches are losing young men. The churches are losing young men because a lot of the churches are effeminate. Paul warns of that in the book of Romans. You need to be effeminate, right? We've got churches now. I work in some of these churches, and you get in there, and the pastor is just like, I mean, the hands are soft. You know, the clothes are soft. It's like, is there any ruggedness to this guy? They put out this vision of a Jesus who's effeminate. I don't see that in scripture, but they do that. You know, he just loves everybody. No, he hates people too. Remember, he goes into the exchangers there and he takes the tables and knocks them over, man. He makes it a scourge and he's chasing people out. That's not an effeminate Jesus. And so when these people don't have a Bible, don't have the scriptures, and they make up their own ideas of what Christ was, we're at a place now where young men don't even know what to be. They've never been trained to be men. And so Doc used to say it all the time. He says, you know, the first thing he trained his boys to do was to be a man. After that, number two, to be a Christian man. He wanted to be a man before he wanted to be a Christian man. Girls, same way. And it's hard to find. They've got a bunch of these things that they call them trad wives, which is they say traditional wives, and they're pushing that stuff, and they're trying to, you know, they want to be stay-at-home moms. I said, hey, glory to God if they can do it. But it's now a thing. It hasn't been a thing since the 70s with the liberation of women, ERA, and all that kind of stuff, which stands for Eve ruined Adam. But it's at a place now where young men aren't taught to be men. And, they want to sit in front of a computer all day. They want to vegetate on some things. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you want to discipline and training. You want to give your children hard work from time and again. You know what? I've worked some hard jobs in this life, and I'm sure you all have. And you can think about some of the hard jobs. I think the worst job I ever had that was the hardest job was the time I had to go to Toledo, Ohio, working for A&R Construction. We used to tear out refractories. And the job we had, there was a refractory up in Toledo. That's where they melt down aluminum and they pour it in those molds, ingot molds, and then they send it off to other places where they melt it down and make pieces, parts. But we go up there. Now, they were supposed to shut the thing down a week before we got there because I think it runs at right 1700 degrees. And what it is, it's a metal shell and then this line with about 12 inches of clay, refractory clay, and then they bake it. And it's like an insulated blanket, but it's hard. It's hard like it's halfway between concrete and maybe drywall, somewhere in the middle. And so our job was to go in there, and they're only about this tall. So you can't stand up. You got to lean over like this. So you're leaned over like this all the time. And you're running a 90-pound jackhammer. So that jackhammer generally sits on your leg like this, and you hold like this, and you jack that thing out. So we get there, and we get the tools out of the truck. We set up, we get up in there. And we get to the first furnace. And I go to go in. And I'm like, whoo, man, it's hot. And we go over to one of the guys working. I said, when did they shut these off? He said, yesterday. Well, they're made to hold heat. That's what they do. They hold the heat in so the aluminum stays molten. Yeah. And so Roy calls his dad. He says, hey, I don't know if we can do this job. The thing's hot. You know that. His dad says, well, go get some plywood. So we get plywood and we lay it on the floor so we can actually walk in there, and the plywood starts to smoke. Just to give you an idea, this is in July. It's like 85 degrees at night. So he said, well, we can't, it's too hot. So we go to the hotel. He says, we'll work at night. So we got up there Monday morning. By Monday noonish, I'm trying to lay down and sleep on a bed in a hotel room. And then we get up and we go, it was like 8:30 at night. We go in there and we start tearing this thing out. And the first wall we get into, me and Roy are jackhammering this wall, and the stuff comes off the wall and lands on his arm, and it's glowing red. It burns his arm. We had to get stuff and wrap it all up and all that kind of stuff. We could work in this in the oven for about 15 minutes, had to come out and take a water break because it was so hot. And that went on for the first 2 days. We were there 4 days tearing that thing out, and we had to put it back together. That's a probably the toughest job I ever did. Awful, terrible, hot. I mean, it felt like you were in hell. It really did. I was making $7.35 an hour. The guys working at the foundry were making $22 an hour. And they came over and said, man, I hope you're making more than us, because there's no way I'd get in there for anything less than, you know, what I'm making now. You know what kept me in there? The training. I should have walked out and said, there's no, I'm not doing this. Find somebody else. I was married. I had Carrie Ann, and I think I had John at the time. I think, yeah, maybe John. I had Carrie. I had two kids. I needed the job. I needed the paycheck. So that's what we did. Tough job. You know what got me through a job like that? Training. My dad, my mom, same thing we taught our kids. You start something, you finish it. You started it, you finish it. You stay with it. Those things are hard. Those things are hard, but you know what? When I got done with Bible school, that guy wanted me to come on with him permanently and work with them. And I said, well, I need a little bit more money than what you're paying me. And he didn't want to pay it, so I found a job someplace else. 3 months later, he calls me up. Hey, I'll give you some more money. And I said, well, I'm making this much money. So, oh, that's too much money. And I said, well, that's the way it is. Hard job. Hard places. But you know what? That's how it is. You know, you're going to train your kids. And if you train them in hard work, listen, everything they go after, everything they do, they're going to be diligent in it. You know what's important about training kids to work hard and stay at something is that it'll help them with whether it's Bible reading or Bible studying or witnessing, all those sort of things. You're developing a character that is a lifelong character. Personally, I don't think I talked to Tom about this, but personally, I can't sit down and just sit in a place for a couple hours and do nothing. It drives me crazy. I'm just not set up that way. I have to do something. Even when I get sick. My problem with me is I get sick, and what happens is I'm laying around for a day or two, and I'm going, I got to do this and this and this and this and this. And finally I get up, I'm like, well, I can do a little bit, and then I push myself too hard. And then I get sick even worse, and I'm in bed for 3 or 4 days. Now, dummy me, if I could get that in my head and not do that every time, I'd be okay. But you're developing that character and that work ethic in a child by the chores and the jobs and things you give them to do and being diligent with it. But you know what? You know what it made us as a family be? We were tight-knit as a family. You picked on one of us, you just picked on 11 of us. And people didn't want to do that, you know. And so it was truly a blessing to grow up in that. And I didn't always understand it at the time, but I do now. I'll talk to one of my brothers on the phone, and he's talking about what's going on with his health. I'll talk about what's going on with mine, and they've got similar issues and problems, and they understand, and I understand, and there's some comfort there. Someone's working his hours, that hours, all kind of hours, through the night. Tom works through the night sometimes. They call me, got to go and fix the problem. TV always got to be on, so that's how those things go. But we're getting to a place where people don't do that anymore. They don't train their kids. They don't give them job to do, things of that nature, and it turns into a real problem because they're unproductive. They're not helpful to an employer. It, you know, people think, well, have your own company. Well, that's fun too. You can give that a shot. Some of you know what that's like. Some of you don't. But listen, I was. If you want to be honest, if you want the honest truth, this morning I didn't want to go into business for myself. I was forced to go into business. I needed a job. And no one wanted to give me a job, so I went and found jobs, and that's how the whole thing started. It's quite enjoying, to say the least. All right, so we're gonna take a couple weeks break. I got more on child rearing, probably two more times of that. But today, I want to start talking about technology, how important that is in the training of your children. Tom and I were talking, I think, last week, week before, and I've had stuff for a while. I looked at some more stuff, and this just, you can't let this fall to the wayside with technology. And so what I want to look at for at least a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks, 2 weeks, maybe three at most. But first I want to look at just from the science, not falsely so-called science, but actual science. Science that lines up with the scriptures, I consider science. And if it doesn't, then it's false science. All right. So I want to deal with the science of technology. I want to talk about the sides of what most of the guys I've read and looked at over the last couple of years, they call it screen time. Screen time will be involved with television, gaming, iPads, internet, social media, all that kind of stuff. The point we're going to look at just from a scientific standpoint and the effects it has on the human body, it deals with screen time. Okay? So screen time is one of those things where, I mean, you older folks, think about 25 years ago, you had zero screen time except maybe Happy Days or The Love Boat or Fantasy Island, two of which I couldn't stand. And my mom, I love my mom, but I couldn't stand Fantasy Island or The Love Boat. The plane. Yeah. I mean, Saturday nights were like, I was depressed. At 8 o'clock, I was depressed. And I was getting popcorn. We were popping popcorn and mom sitting down there. And she put down The Love Boat. Whatever it was, I don't know. That whole time was just a tough time in my childhood. Abused, abusive, terrible, terrible. But you know, all that stuff was there 25 years ago. And if you're 25 or under, you don't understand that. You've always had technology for the most part. And so I've been looking at a bunch of stuff, and I'm gonna give you some things this morning. But first of all, I want to deal with the science part of it, the physical, emotional, psychological aspects of screen time, the effects upon the body. The state of Ohio this past week, I don't know if they passed it or in the process of passing, they're eliminating cell phones from the school. No more cell phones. Because these studies are, I mean, it's not just one study or two studies. There are dozens of studies now on this information. We have gotten to a place where a parent doesn't want to be a parent, so they get it on an iPad and they hand it to the kid and they say, here you go, buddy. And they say, well, he's nice and quiet, but the study, and we'll get into it. You think the kid's quiet, but what you're doing is you're burning out his front part of his brain there. We'll get into that in a minute, but you're making a mess of things. You're not making it any better. You're not making it any better. Rule number one, this is a rule that Pastor Jim made, right? And that says if you have no control over your own screen time, your kids won't either. I never got into Pac-Man, Mrs. Pac-Man, Atari. What was the one? Ooh, they come down the screen. I forget. I was never a guy that played the games when they first came out. None of them. Guys in school, oh, man, we got an Atari for Christmas. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. I'd go over a friend's house and they were playing games. I wanted to physically play wiffle ball and physically play football. I don't want to play no stupid computer game. That was just me. And so I see it all the time where we went into a job on, was that Thursday? We did those doors. I go to this job on Thursday. What do you got, four kids or five kids? Three. They're helping. The wife's in the kitchen, iPad. One kid's up in the bedroom here, phone, iPad. Four people in the house and none of them are talking to each other. They're all glued in. They're like, this is like 8 o'clock in the morning. They got it out and the kids are following mom and you're just like, I'm walking out of these rooms. These kids don't even acknowledge I walked in the room. A girl, I could take the kid and run outside and kidnap him. That's like I tell people all the time. I'll be 60 this year. I used to have 200 to 300 telephone numbers memorized because you had to call somebody. I can't even tell you what my wife's phone number is. I can't tell you Tim's phone number. I call him all the time. I said, Tim, I don't know what his number is. I know he changed it. I don't know what it is. Carrie's, Jamie's, forget about it. Why is that? Well, technology, all that kind of stuff. It's not what it used to be. Are we better off now? They're called conveniences. So the first thing, as we deal with the science of the technology and the problem, like even first of all, it's called blue light. All right, you got a computer, it's putting out blue light. If you got an iPad, even your phone, you'll have these things putting out blue light. It's they've got glasses now that offset blue light. They've got settings on your screen that you can change for blue light. But here's some stats on blue light. The more you get, the less photoreceptors you have, the worse your vision will be. Blue light can ruin your photoreceptors in the back of your eye. It leads to dry eye inflammation. They distort your lack, I'll spell it for you, LACRIMAL, reflex, lubrication of your eyes. In other words, there's a part of your eye that lubricates itself. Well, blue light ruins that reflux, ruins that ability to keep your eye. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's a lot of medications now and a lot of advertisements for dry eye. And that's directly proportionate to the usage we have now, computers, laptops, TVs, all that kind of stuff, that screen time. So if you're getting a lot of dry eyes, and this wasn't common back in the day, but it's very common now. People get dry eye all the time. Matter of fact, they have a commercial that talks about G something or another, and it's really where your eyes dry out, and then they never repair themselves. And you can't fix it. You can slow it down, but you can't fix it. So our eye, the way God made your eye, takes in less than 1% of UV rays that come down from the sun. The sun is so bright that as you look out, your irises close down tight, so and you shift or block or blink, and that blocks that UV. Only about 1% of the sun's UV lights lands on the back of your eye, your retina. Nearly all blue light reaches your retina. The reason for that, they say, is the blue light is not as bright. Therefore, your eye's not set up to handle it. So all that blue light goes and hits the back of your eye where your photoreceptors are, and that's where they're located. And so when you're looking at those things, when you're watching those things, if just from a science standpoint, you're bombarding the back of your eye with that blue light, and it'll damage your eye. I'm waiting to see what happens in the next 20 or 30 years. People are noticing their eyesight getting worse and worse. The studies I was looking at, if you have glaucoma, the people with glaucoma, they have people with glaucoma who are looking at their computers and their screen time X amount of time a day, and these over here, none at all. These people that watched the screen had a lot of screen time. Their field of vision was worse than people over here that had no screen time. So what does it do? It ruins the back of your eye. That's what it does. Now, I get it. Work is one thing. I mean, some of you probably are stuck with the idea of, are stuck in front of a computer, that sort of thing every day. And I can give you recommendations on what a lot of these different guys say. A couple of the articles I read are guys who actually, they're in front of a computer 4 or 5 hours a day. That's just their job, what the job is. But they recommend taking breaks every 40, 45 minutes, get away from the screen, process what you've already done. let's see where I want to get it. Oh, let's go to this one. I'm looking at some studies here. This study here was in 2013. Guy's name is Dong, D-O-N-G, and DeVito, and 2013. And it's been study proved that participants in the study, they showed a decreased ability to stop impulse behavior, like yelling, hitting, and crying. They also showed more random activity in their brains that leads to decreased attention and focus. Let me slow that down a little bit. In other words, if you see a child who is struggling with throwing temper tantrums all the time and paying no attention in school, it's because they're spending too much time in front of the blue light. It's a snowball effect. What they're finding in these studies are the more children are exposed to screen time, the more screen time they need to be exposed to because they can't control that. They can't stop it. It's like And this leads to so many other things. I mean, I've got so many thoughts and avenues in which I can go. When you're, let's do it this way. The prefrontal cortex, that is the part of your brain behind your forehead. It's right here in the back. All right. It's responsible for executive functioning. Executive functioning is simply this. It's where you think about things, where you make decisions. It's right here behind the front, okay? It deals with skills like planning, organizing, prioritizing, and impulse control, which is important. When you think, that area of your brain is active, okay? This part of the brain allows one to control their feelings, make rational decisions, and deal with stress and guilt in a healthy manner. That's what it's there for. The problem in that front cortex is as you're bombarded with all these things, you'll end up flying off the handle. It's indicative to people who get angry quickly, people who make poor decisions all the time. They're not making good decisions. They struggle with self-consciousness. They struggle with what people think of them. Well, you know why that is? All that stuff they're taking in is controlling that frontal cortex. It's their way of going through those things and saying, all right, what about this person? What about that person? What are they thinking of me? It doesn't matter. All these things are started with when you start thinking about whatever you're doing. Someone's playing a game. One kid that they were talking to, he says, well, he's got one of those earpieces on and he's talking to people and they're playing a game at the same time. I guess they play them online. I need to look into that more so I can understand it. But they say, well, I'm interacting with people. No, you're not. You're in a game. You're in a game. So this is, you have the temporal lobe. That's the temporal lobe is on each side of the ears. It processes what you hear. It processes how you speak, right? If you slur your speech, those sort of things. Those things are attached to like stroke victims. Occipital lobe, it's the back part of your brain, back in the back here. It's where the stuff goes in your eyes and it's processed in the back of your head. It takes the things that come into your head and it goes through. It's like, you ever see an Encyclopedia Britannica? And all the different page after page after page, just information. That's the back part of your brain. When your eye looks at something, the back part of your brain goes like this. And it finds a picture that lines up with what you're looking at now to tell you what that is. It's an amazing part of the brain. When I think about it, how interesting. I mean, he's saying billions of pictures or images are in that section of your brain. So when you see something, let's say you see a bird for the first time, you take a picture and it gets stored in the back of that. So down the road, you see that thing 5 years later. Yeah, I remember that. That's this. And that's how you assimilate information by those things you're taking. Someone who has a photographic memory, those things are stored in that same place, and that recall is right there. That's the occipital lobe in the back part of the brain. Parietal lobe, that's the top of the brain. It keeps track of your limbs. Like this, if you were to put your head back, close your eyes, and you lift your arms up, you can actually see your arms coming up. That's the top of the brain is able to do that. That's, you ever notice you drop something, you got something like this, you reach out to and you grab it, like, how did that, it's like I'm a ninja or something. Right? I just picked it up. That's because that's part of the brain. The longer you live to an extent, you're able to understand where those limbs are going, what you're going to do. That's why I say juggling is easier for an older person than for a younger person. It's crazy. It's just, when you study the brain, it's pretty neat what God has produced there. So that being said, that's the application of screen time, or rather the amount of screen time. It actually the frontal part of the brain there, it is becoming fried. the cells that are contained in the frontal lobe there, as you burn those out on the blue light, you burn them out of those all that screen time that you have, you burn them out and you lose those cells in your brain. And they don't come back. They don't come back. This is producing as well, an identity crisis today. People don't know who they are or their purpose in life. And here's the problem. The brains are, number one, overstimulated. Overstimulated. You should go online and look up how to fall asleep or how to get good sleep. And they'll tell you how to get good sleep. To get good sleep, your body releases melatonin, and it does that as you wind down. Now, if you're sitting there watching a shootout movie, you know, you're watching The Matrix, man. What you get gets guns, not a gun. Well, what that's doing in your frontal cortex is it's firing all these things up, and the dopamine and all these other drugs that are firing off as you watch this, you're part of that movie. You're part of that movie. The one guy says, well, who watches Old Yeller and doesn't cry when he gets shot? You know why you cry when you watch those romantic love movies? Because you're in the movie. Your feelings, where you think, right, the frontal lobe there, the things that you think about, is affected. So people that are watching those things, and whether it's gaming, whether it's movies, whether it's YouTube videos, all that stuff, you're firing that front part of your brain, you're firing it up, and what's happening? It's working. It's active. It's going off. And then you get done, you jump into bed, and then you're trying to fall asleep, and you're laying in bed. And then you finally fall asleep, but the brain doesn't stop working there. When the melatonin doesn't come in when it needs to, and it doesn't come in because your brain's firing, so it holds it off. All these things, I mean, you think about the struggle here with just sleep alone. Kids are tired. I mean, I'll bring in the stats next week of the screen time in age categories and what's going on. It's crazy. Listen, you folks that are 40 and older, there's nothing you did when you were younger that you spent 6 hours a day doing. You did. There's nothing. And now people spend, they were looking at ages 61 and older, where 65% of them were spending X amount, like 5-6 hours a day on their devices, on screen time. It's crazy. It's crazy. So we'll get back to this next week. I'll get you a bunch of other stuff. I still got page after page here, but we'll deal with it. But we'll deal with it on a science, how it affects the body, the thoughts, all those kind of stuff. We'll deal with all that. But then we'll wrap it up with talking about the spiritual aspects of these devices, the spiritual aspect of screen time, and what it's doing to our young people, and not just them, but even older people. Paul says this: but I will not be brought under the power of any. That's over Corinthians. Paul said this. He said, there was nothing that's going to control him. Moms and dads, you can't allow technology, that screen time, to control you. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some of the YouTube videos, they're funny. I mean, they're funny. I mean, that one where the guy's got a cast iron skillet and he's hitting people in the head. Doing, doing, it is funny. But boy, you go down and all of those things are designed to grab our attention and to hold it. That's the problem. That's the problem. All right, we'll take a break there, pick it up.